I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's June 20th, and we have a lot to talk about. I just returned from Vienna, Austria, where I attended the 4th International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress. The core mission of the International Progressive MS Alliance is to accelerate research focused on ending progressive MS. And accelerating research happens by facilitating collaboration and providing resources to find answers and develop solutions. The Congress checked all of these boxes, providing an opportunity to share the findings of the 17 Challenge Awards that the Alliance had funded about 2 years ago. To acquire the perspective of the pharmaceutical industry on progressive MS and offer opportunities to connect Alliance investigators with industry colleagues and expertise, and to consider new Alliance initiatives and opportunities to address unmet needs in progressive MS. The Challenge Awards were designed to uncover new biological mechanisms that drive progressive MS. Discoveries that could be used to identify the therapeutic targets that will ultimately slow or stop disability progression. Progressive MS is complex, and so, as you might imagine, the science being discussed was equally complex. I had an opportunity to talk with some of the world-class scientists who made presentations during the Scientific Congress. And in those conversations, I did my best to have them distill their observations into language that's relatively easy for us non-scientists to understand. Well, I think I succeeded, at least some of the time. My goal in this episode of the podcast is to take you inside the Scientific Congress and have you meet some of the international scientists who came together to meet the challenges of progressive MS research, look ahead, and help forge a successful future for everyone affected by progressive MS. The findings presented at this meeting will influence and directly impact the direction and development of new Alliance initiatives focused on understanding and solving MS progression. Over the course of 2 days, the presentations and conversations covered quite a lot of ground. So this week, you're listening to part one of our coverage of the Scientific Congress. That coverage will conclude in next week's episode in part two. Just before the Scientific Congress got underway, I had an opportunity to talk with the chair of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee, Dr. Robert Fox. During our conversation, Dr. Fox provided an overview of the Alliance and laid out the objectives of the meeting. Dr. Robert Fox is a neurologist at the Cleveland Clinic's Mellen Center for Multiple Sclerosis Treatment and Research and the Vice Chair of Research at the Cleveland Clinic Neurological Institute. He's also a professor of neurology at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine, and Dr. Fox chairs the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. Welcome to Vienna, and welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Fox.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here, and I want to thank you for all the attention you've brought to progressive MS.
Well, several thousand of my listeners are actually living with primary progressive or secondary progressive MS, and over the years, they've seen more than 20 disease-modifying therapies become available for people living with relapsing-remitting MS, but not so many for people living with progressive MS. From a research or drug development perspective, what is it about progressive MS that makes it so challenging?
Well, let me take you way back to the 1960s and 1970s, when there was tremendous nihilism and pessimism around the ability to develop therapies. Then in the late 1980s, early 1990s, bingo, we made breakthrough. We developed therapies for MS, starting with relapsing MS, and then we developed more and more, and the excitement spread, and we thought, we can just take those therapies and apply it to the later stages, progressive MS, both primary and secondary progressive MS. And so in the 2000s, we did one trial after another using the same relapsing therapies, and we're really puzzled when we found that they really didn't work in progressive MS. And so then it raised the question, why not? Why have we developed such a great pipeline? And as you indicated, over 20 FDA-approved or approved by regulatory bodies around the country therapies for relapsing forms of MS. But we really, really struggle with developing progressive MS therapies. And the answer really comes back to progressive MS is probably something fundamentally different from relapsing MS. It's still triggered by and set up by whatever is going on with relapsing MS, but the disease, the pathology, the mechanisms that drive progressive MS are most certainly different, transform, become something different in progressive MS than they are in relapsing MS, because that's the only way to explain why our relapsing MS therapies really don't do much in progressive MS.
You know, since some of our listeners may not be as familiar with the Alliance as you and I hope you'll take a minute to explain what the Progressive MS Alliance is and what role the Scientific Steering Committee plays.
The Progressive MS Alliance started when some academics and MS societies from around the country were scratching their heads around that question of progressive MS. How do we make inroads? How do we crack the nut to understand what progressive MS is and how do we develop therapies? And these MS societies, the US, Canadian, Australian, Italian, UK, and several others, joined together and said, you know what? Let's form a collaborative. We aren't competing with each other. We want to work together with each other. And let's bring along the academics, the scientists, the clinical trialists, the basic science researchers, the imaging researchers that are in our countries, bring them along as well to help with one focus. And it's to understand progressive MS and develop therapies for it. And so that's what really put the whole thing together, drove the whole thing, was the frustration that each of us had with understanding and developing therapies for progressive MS and wanting to do something beyond just our individual organization, our university, our society, but to pull together and harness the efforts from around the world. The Scientific Steering Committee then is the scientific driver behind the Alliance. It is the committee that decides what we want to do, what directions to go into. Now, we've developed a roadmap. We develop a scientific strategy to help guide us so we're not just wandering around month to month and year to year. So we have a roadmap. We have a strategy, and we develop specific things, specific efforts around accomplishing that strategy.
Well, given this global collaborative network that the Alliance actually is, how would you characterize the value that the Alliance brings to the MS community?
The Alliance brings value in a couple different ways. One is it joins together people from many different areas, many different countries, academics, nonprofits, people affected by MS, industry. We become a voice to make connections to regulators who are an important part of developing therapies for MS. It becomes a forum to connect all those different people together. Today here in Vienna, there was a convening of the industry forum, where representatives from many of the different pharmaceutical companies that are trying to develop therapies for progressive MS come together and share their thoughts and ideas, trying to leverage off of each other how they can identify tools that they can all use to develop therapies. And they've shared with me that they don't have any other forum where different people from different companies can come together in the same room to sit down to say, how can we each help each other where we'll all develop therapies faster and more efficiently? And without the alliance, they don't have a place to sit down to share those ideas.
Before we get to why we're here in Vienna, I want to ask you about a recent announcement from the Alliance. Just a few weeks ago on World MS Day, the Alliance announced a large-scale research program designed to implement solutions for some of the most challenging symptoms that people living with MS experience, specifically fatigue, impairment of mobility and upper limb function, pain, and cognitive impairment. I hope our listeners can take just a moment to imagine how different MS might feel if those specific symptoms could be mitigated or resolved. So the first stage of this new research pipeline has already been completed. The Alliance's request for applications resulted in 53 applications from 11 countries being submitted. What happens now?
So first, let me take a step back and why are we doing it? Back when the Alliance was forming itself and figuring out, well, how are we going to attack this issue of progressive MS? There were three main roadblocks that were identified. The first roadblock was, well, what is progressive MS? What is causing progressive MS? What is the pathology or the broken mechanisms within the brain and the spinal cord that is causing progressive MS? The second was, how do we accelerate the development of therapies? How do we figure out how to do trials in progressive MS faster, more efficiently, less cost, less people to identify promising drugs and move them on to bigger studies, or identify the losers and kick them out and move on faster? Both are just as important. You don't want to spend more time than you need with a loser. You do want to identify the winners and carry them forward. The third area, and that is the area that we've made the least progress as an alliance and scientifically across the field, is making life better for those who are affected by progressive MS. Addressing the symptoms, helping to restore function to people affected by MS. And that is where we've made the least inroads as an organization, the Progressive MS Alliance. So in response to that, we issued a request for applications, a request for proposals for people who have ideas of how to develop a network, how to develop an outcome measure, how to develop some proof of concept clinical study, how to do a study to identify therapies for those four areas, those four major unmet needs in terms of symptoms for progressive MS. So now with all those applications, we have over 50 applications, which is fantastic. They are going to go to a scientific review where we get scientists, researchers, and people affected by MS and people from industry who can look at these applications and identify which ones are the most promising, are the most exciting, look to have the most potential to move forward our identification of effective therapies for the symptoms that people have to endure when they live with progressive MS. And those are the ones that will get forward, will move forward and be funded, and hopefully move things in a positive direction to find treatments to help people's lives.
Well, I'm going to be looking forward to hearing more about the projects that get funded and what happens next. But today, we're here in Vienna at the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress. What's the objective of this Congress, and what can we expect to see and hear over the next couple of days?
So this Congress actually dates back about 3 years ago, when the Alliance decided to issue a request for applications, just like that other request for applications or request for proposals that I just mentioned on the wellness and symptoms. We issued a request for proposals for challenge awards. These were patterned after what the Gates Foundation does, which is they give groups $100,000, U.S. dollars, and say, go solve an important problem that the Gates Foundation has identified. And they give out a whole bunch of awards. It's just a one-year, $100,000, go move the needle in a big way, not just a small increment. Go try something that is way outside of the box and see if it works. So these awards were 1 year, a little less than 100,000 euros to accomplish something, overcome something, identify something, validate something in a very focused, targeted way. Went through peer review. We identified the most promising projects. 17 were awarded and carried out and carried through. They were a little delayed by the COVID pandemic, as many things were. But here we are now hearing the outcome. We are hearing the results of those 17 projects, those 17 challenge awards that were trying to find solutions to very specific targeted problems, testing out new hypotheses to go way outside of the box and take many steps forward in our understanding of and developing treatments for progressive MS.
Dr. Robert Fox, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And I'll add a special thanks for your leadership of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. And thanks for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be with you, John. Take care.
From its inception, the International Progressive MS Alliance recognized the importance of including the voices of people affected by progressive MS. Several people living with progressive MS were in attendance at the Scientific Congress, where they participated in most of the panel discussions that we heard. Just a couple of hours before the Congress got underway, I talked with Vanessa Fanning, the chair of the People Affected by MS Engagement Coordination Team. Vanessa Fanning lives with progressive MS. In fact, she's the chair of the International Progressive MS Alliance's People Affected by MS Engagement Coordination Team. Welcome to Vienna, and welcome to the podcast, Vanessa.
Thank you very much, John. I'm a great fan of Real Talk MS and a regular listener, and it's a great privilege to be invited to join the podcast today.
The privilege is all mine. And I'm hoping you'll start us off by explaining what the People Affected by MS Engagement Coordination Team is and how it functions.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? We're a group of eight people. We all live with and are affected by progressive MS. And we've been drawn from various countries around the world. And we usually meet by Zoom. We meet virtually. We meet every couple of months. And our role is to be advisors to the International Progressive MS Alliance on all matters that people with living with progressive MS experience. So we advise, and among the stakeholders advising on research priorities and what is really of relevance to people living with MS. We get involved in evaluating the projects that are put forward for funding by the Alliance. And we also, of course, in a position from our own experience and drawing on the experience of our peer networks to explain to researchers some of the issues and barriers that affect people living with MS in terms of their participation in research. Sometimes those barriers are simply not knowing that the opportunity to participate exists. Sometimes they're practical or logistical. Sometimes they're emotional. But the Alliance itself is very committed to involving people who are actually living with progressive MS in contributing to the global research effort. And it's incredibly rewarding to have that opportunity.
What does the International Progressive MS Alliance represent to you?
Well, it's really exciting because it brings together scientists from all around the world, and the emphasis is really on collaboration. So scientists aren't working in silos. We have multidisciplinary teams. The scientists on a particular project might come from five or six different countries. And what they're working on is finding out what causes progression, why progression is different in different people, myelin repair, neuronal repair, stopping and reversing progressive MS. And that's an area that has really been neglected in the past. Scientists have always worked on finding a cure to MS, but for people living with progressive MS, it's not just about a cure. We're living with it right now, and we have this incredible sense of urgency because sometimes there is this inexorable progression which may affect cognition, it may affect mobility, it may cause pain, depression, anxiety, it may affect our physical well-being. And so for us, finding solutions to neuronal and myelin repair and perhaps ideally reversing the damage that MS has already caused, that is so important to us, and that's what the Alliance is focused on.
A moment ago, you mentioned how the Alliance is so committed to having people who are affected by progressive MS involve themselves, provide feedback on research and what have you. How important is that? How important do you think is including the voices of people affected by progressive MS in the work that the Alliance undertakes?
Well, I think it's enormously important. It's quite recently I've met scientists who might have been working on MS for 10 or 15 years and they've never met somebody who actually lives with MS before. So there really is knowledge and expertise that we have because we live with the illness. We know what are the most difficult things about living with MS. We know how it affects people. And we have insights into how people with living with MS can contribute to research. And I think once scientists take that leap and start involving people living with the condition, they realize how much we have to offer.
We're here in Vienna for the Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress that officially gets underway in just a couple of hours. What are you expecting to see and hear over the next few days?
Well, the focus of this Congress is the outcomes of 17 projects that were funded by the Alliance, and the focus was on challenges. So the brief was to produce really innovative research addressing aspects of progressive MS, particularly focused on stopping and reversing and repairing the damage, stopping and reversing MS and repairing the damage that MS has done, and finding out what causes progression. So it couldn't be more exciting or relevant to us. And we have no idea what is coming out of these papers that are going to be presented over the next couple of days, but we're very optimistic that there's going to be some pretty interesting and exciting news that might lead to solutions to some of the issues that affect us all.
Several thousand of our listeners live with progressive MS. What do you want them to know about the future of progressive MS research?
Well, I think people living with progressive MS should draw great comfort from the fact that the Alliance exists, that it's bringing together scientists from all over the world. It's not only bringing together researchers, it's bringing together the pharmaceutical industry. It really is a multi-stakeholder global collaboration. The best and the brightest people are working on MS, progressive MS now, and there have already been breakthroughs in the research, and I think that the Alliance is really on track to produce findings that are going to improve our lives in, hopefully, in the near future.
Well, Vanessa, it's been a while since you and I have seen each other. It's great being together in person again. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
And thank you for the invitation, John. Thank you very much. And thank you for all the work that you do for people living with MS.
The Scientific Congress started off with a welcome and some initial remarks from several leaders in the Alliance, including Cindy Zaghi-Boilo, the President and CEO of the National MS Society in the United States and Chair of the Alliance Executive Committee, Vanessa Fanning, the Chair of the People Affected by MS Engagement Coordination Team, Florian von Raison and Marco Salvetti, the co-chairs of the Alliance Industry Forum, and Dr. Robert Fox, the Chair of the Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. After these opening remarks, Professor Tanya Kuhlman's presentation focused on identifying the biological mechanisms that drive progression in multiple sclerosis. Professor Tanya Kuhlman is an associate professor at the Institute of Neuropathology at University Hospital Münster in Germany and a part-time adjunct professor in the Department of Neurology and Neurosurgery at McGill University in Canada. Some of you may recall that Professor Kuhlman joined me on the podcast at the very beginning of 2023 to discuss a recommendation by the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis to adopt a new framework for describing MS. Professor Kuhlman was the lead author of the paper that put forward this new framework that recommends moving away from the very familiar descriptions of relapsing, remitting, secondary progressive, and primary progressive MS, descriptions that have been in use since the mid-1990s, and instead describe MS based upon the specific biological mechanisms that drive MS. Based upon what we've learned since the mid-1990s, there are very valid reasons for updating the way that MS is described. And if you missed my earlier conversation with Professor Kuhlman, I hope you'll take a few minutes to familiarize yourself with the proposed framework by listening to episodes 279 and 280 of Real Talk MS, and you'll find links to both episodes in today's show notes. But today we're at the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress, where earlier Professor Kuhlman shared a presentation on the mechanisms of MS progression. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Kuhlman.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
While many of my listeners understand the symptoms of MS, they may not be familiar with the concept of mechanisms that drive MS. So I'm hoping you can explain what we mean when we refer to mechanisms as opposed to symptoms.
Yeah, maybe let me start with a more simple example. So if you have a cold and you cough, the underlying mechanism for that and the reason why you are cough is, for example, a viral infection and an irritation of the respiratory air system. So in MS, it's actually, I think, quite similar. So, for example, I think all of you are aware that the reason that one of the histological hallmarks of MS are these focal lesions you can find in the brain. And if you have these focal lesions, the clinical correlate, the symptom you will see is your neurological deficit that you will have for a certain amount of time. However, the question for us is if we want to treat these symptoms successfully, we need to understand what are the mechanisms driving the clinical symptoms.
We always describe MS as a progressive disease, and I think it's that idea that MS progresses rapidly in some people, slowly in others, and seemingly not in all and still others that creates the uncertainty that worries people living with MS. Not knowing day to day when a symptom may get worse or a new symptom might develop. Symptoms, as we've said, are the function of progression, but what I'll call the biology of progression is a little bit different. What do we know about how MS progresses over time?
You mean based on the mechanisms?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what you have to imagine is that MS is a quite complex disease. You have different things that are going wrong in the brain. On the one hand, you have this focal lesion I spoke about, and I guess you can see, for example, on your MRI images, you can see there the focal lesions. However, these focal lesions trigger other things in the brain that are also detrimental. So what happens is you have such a lesion, you have an influx of inflammatory cells, and sometimes these inflammatory cells persist. And then, for example, that means that the lesion that you have expand over time. And this then, again, results in other things that are bad for the brain. For example, you also have less repair mechanisms that can that are also can occur in the brain. So what you have to think about, you have different things that go wrong in the brain. And in some, and then there are some things that we call compensatory mechanisms. That means that the brain try to counteract these injury mechanisms you have in the brain. And some patients have very good compensatory mechanisms, and for these patients it might be easier to counteract these injury mechanisms, and these patients may have a slower disease progression. Other patients may have not these good compensatory mechanisms, but they have strong injury mechanisms, and these most likely the patients with a rapid disease progression.
I think you're the perfect expert to answer my next question. It's a term that we hear more and more about. Progression independent of relapse activity. What do we mean when we talk about progression independent of relapse activity, and what's important in understanding that?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's the best term for what we want to describe, actually. So what is meant by that the patient have a relapse, and then they get a worsening of the symptoms, and then over a certain amount of time, they see also a improvement of the symptoms again. However, then a certain time after this clinical relapse, again, the patients see a worsening of the symptoms, although they didn't have a clinical relapse. And this is what we call progression independent of relapse activity. However, it doesn't mean that this is something that happens completely independent of the focal lesions you have in the brain. So also this so-called relapse independent of lesion activity is triggered initially by the focal lesions you have in the time. However, the clinical outcome that you face as a patient only occurs at a certain time after the focal lesion events that you had.
And that's why it's so important to be focusing on these mechanisms, these events that are taking place in the brain, to support more precise treatment.
Yes, and also to understand how these focal lesions trigger all the other things that are going on in the brain. I think this is something we at the moment don't understand so well. We understand very well the development of the focal lesions, but now we understand really what are the molecular mechanisms then relating also in all the other mechanisms that leads to these relapse-independent disease progression. And this is a task for the next couple of years, I think.
Can you describe the importance of international collaboration in MS research?
Yes, of course. I think these are very, very important because, of course, the disease is so complex that you have experts that are expert in certain small areas of the disease. So you have experts that are maybe, you have scientists that are more expert, for example, for repair mechanisms. You have experts that understand very well the inflammation in the brain. You have experts that work on certain cell types in the brain. And of course, it's much better if you get the expert with all these different expertise together when they want to address one question. And frequently, these experts live in different countries all over the world. And of course, there shouldn't be boundaries because of countries. They should all come together to all address together these questions they think are important to help patients with MS.
Well, certainly, I think speaking for people who are affected by MS, they're more than happy to have those answers to those questions come from wherever they may come from.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And you know, as you were describing, bringing all these experts together from various parts of the world, each with their own focus, their own expertise, that's pretty much what we have in the room today during this meeting.
Exactly. I think it's great to see all the different people coming together from all over the world, you know, and everybody's trying to advance our knowledge in MS.
Brings me to my last question. What would you want people affected by progressive MS to know about progressive MS research right now?
I think I would like to know that this is a very active field we are working on, I think we have realized how important that is. We have realized that it's not enough to prevent the influx of inflammatory cells into the brain, that this is not sufficient to stop disease progression, and that we now have really to understand what is happening in the brain. And I think we are now currently at a very good time point because there are new technologies that have developed in the last years. And I think these new technologies will help us to have new answers regarding the question, what is really driving disease progression in MS? And I'm quite optimistic that we will develop new potential treatment targets that may help to treat patients with progressive MS.
Well, Professor Tanya Kuhlman, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Professor Robin Franklin provided what amounted to a masterclass on understanding myelin cell rejuvenation, or remyelination. Professor Robin Franklin is a cell biologist and neuroscientist. He's currently a principal investigator at Altos Labs, which operates both in the United States and at Cambridge Institute of Science. Professor Franklin is a former professor of stem cell medicine at the Wellcome MRC Cambridge Stem Cell Institute at the University of Cambridge, and he's an emeritus fellow of Pembroke College, Cambridge. Welcome to Vienna, and welcome to the podcast, Professor Franklin.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts about the role of the International Progressive MS Alliance and the value that its work represents to the MS community?
Well, I'm quite clearly tackling progressive MS is the next big challenge in the field. And you know, the reason it's taken such a long time to address is because it's difficult and complicated. And all topics that are difficult and complicated require collaborative investigation. And so harnessing the very best of basic science, applied science, and clinical research across the globe is, frankly, the only way that this major problem is going to be addressed.
The Alliance Scientific Congress is just getting underway. What are your expectations of what we'll be hearing over the next couple of days?
Right. So I'm very excited to hear what progress has been made. I followed this field, partly through my own work and listening to other people over a number of years. And I think we're inching closer towards an understanding the multiple mechanisms involved in progressive MS. And of course, if you understand mechanisms, it gives you ideas about therapy. So I'm hoping to see that the field has moved on by a quantum amount over the last few years and hear about it over the next few days.
When I introduced you, I said that you are a principal investigator at Altos Labs, a biotech research company. And a visit to Altos Labs' website reveals the company's mission to, and I want to quote now, to restore cell health and resilience through cellular rejuvenation programming to reverse disease, injury, and the disabilities that can occur throughout life. Well, that's nothing short of an amazing mission statement in itself. I think when people living with MS hear the term cellular rejuvenation, their thoughts go to the subject of remyelination. And I should share with my listeners that you are a true pioneer in advancing our understanding of the biology that drives remyelination, having made several significant contributions through your research, including demonstrating remyelination by transplanted oligodendrocyte progenitor cells and olfactory and sheathing cells. The human body has a natural ability to repair myelin. However, in multiple sclerosis, this natural process falters and eventually fails. Do we know why?
Well, I think we know why. So remyelination is a spontaneous regenerative process, as you say, and it occurs pretty efficiently when you're young. But as with all regenerative processes, in any tissue, and frankly in any organism, the efficiency of regenerative processes declines as you get older. So a disease such as MS, which has a duration of many decades, your ability to regenerate myelin is declining simply as a function of age. Now, that could be for a whole variety of reasons, but one of the things we've discovered is that the progenitor cell in the brain, or the stem cell, if you like, that is responsible for remyelination, functions very well when you're a young adult, but then as you progress through adult life, the function of that cell gets progressively worse. So you reach a point where the inherent ability of that stem cell to engage in remyelination is so defective that you don't regenerate myelin as efficiently as you should, And therefore, the exposed axons remain exposed and very vulnerable, axons or nerve fibers, in other words. And if you lose those, that's irreversible change in the brain. And that's, we think, the basis of the progressive phase of the disease. So what we try to do is to understand why stem cells change as they get older, and can you do anything about it? Can you reverse the effects of aging on the stem cell? To which the answer is simply yes.
Brings me to my very next question. You're here at this scientific congress sharing a presentation about remyelination. What can you tell us about the progress that's being made in this research?
I think the progress that has been made in understanding the biology of remyelination, the reasons why it fails, and what you can do to reverse that has been really quite spectacular over the last 5 or 6 years. So as I just mentioned, we've shown that while the effects of aging of the stem cell, progenitor cell, changes with aging, there are a number of interventions one can do that revert that change and make it behave as if it was a young stem cell and remyelinate efficiently. So this age-associated decline of remyelination, which underpins to some extent the progressive phase of the disease, is reversible. That's a very encouraging observation to make. So the next steps are to think how we can make that druggable, how we can come up with treatments that will reverse the effects of aging in patients, and we hope at least slow the progression of the disease.
Well, I think you just started answering my final question for you, which is, what would you like people affected by progressive MS to know about the future of MS research?
Well, I think generally the prospects are pretty good. I think specifically in the field of remyelination, we're still in the foothills, but at least now we can see the summit. And of course, that's a great thing. You know where you're going now. And I think the path is quite clear and achievable.
Well, Professor Robin Franklin, thank you for the remarkable work you continue to do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure.
Professor Olga Ciccarelli co-chaired a session focused on remyelination, and I had an opportunity to talk with Professor Ciccarelli about remyelination and some of her other research. Research that I find fascinating and full of potential for defining the future of MS diagnosis and care. Professor Olga Ciccarelli is an NIHR research professor of neurology at the University College London Queen Square Institute of Neurology. And for our listeners outside of the UK, the NIHR is a National Institute for Health and Care Research in the UK. Professor Ciccarelli is the head of the Department of Neuroinflammation at UCLA Queen Square Institute of Neurology. She's a senior member of the MS Clinical Service at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. Professor Ciccarelli leads research studies in MS. She teaches postgraduate students. She's a research ambassador for the UK MS Society. And Professor Ciccarelli is the deputy editor of Neurology, the official journal of the American Academy of Neurology. Welcome to Vienna, Professor Ciccarelli, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Can you describe what you find unique about the International Progressive MS Alliance and the value that it brings to the MS community?
The unique aspect of the Alliance is a collaboration between different stakeholders. So there are researchers, junior researchers, senior researchers, patients with MS, charities, industries, pharma companies, all really working together towards understanding the mechanism of MS and hopefully finding a cure to stop MS.
And what's your role in the Alliance?
Yeah, so I'm a member of the steering committee of the Alliance, so I have participated into developing the strategy of the Alliance, the pathway to impact, and some reviews for the most recent applications. I also been awarded some funding for the Alliance. So I'm trying really to help to develop a successful program and achieve results that can make a difference.
Well, the Scientific Congress is just getting underway. What are your expectations of what we'll be hearing over the next couple of days?
It is a very exciting Congress, because it will allow people who were awarded the Challenges Awards to present their preliminary or final research results, and this will help the Alliance to understand where to go next. So it's a sort of intermediate point, but also final points for those who have completed their research and see what are the most exciting aspects of progression in MS that we have to focus in the next stage.
Well, that leads me to my very next question. You're co-chairing a session on axonal degeneration and remyelination. To people living with MS, remyelination holds the promise of restoring lost function. Where are we in our understanding of remyelination in MS?
Yes, so as you said, remyelination is crucial because it not only allows people to recover their clinical symptoms, but also a remyelinated axon is an axon that is going to survive and not to degenerate. So also helps to prevent further progression. But you're right, for people with MS, the importance of remyelination that brings the idea that possibly recovery of function is achievable. Our understanding is that remyelination occurs in MS, but is not complete, and the deficit in remyelination is responsible for progression. And there are different aspects of remyelination that we need to focus on. Activation of oligodendrocyte precursor cells, and then migration of these cells, differentiation of cells. So there are different steps that are important for remyelination, and each of these steps can become a target of treatments. And there are very exciting pilot data of first in human study or phase two studies that suggested that there are remyelinating agents that can become useful to treat MS.
Today, there is perhaps more interest in AI, artificial intelligence, than ever before. You were part of a team that published what I found to be a really interesting paper based on your research using unsupervised machine learning and MRI data to identify multiple sclerosis subtypes. And if I remember correctly, your team observed that new, I guess what we can call subtly apparent subtypes of MS were actually identified. Can you tell us about that research?
Yes, so MS is commonly defined on the basis of clinical grounds and symptoms. So we talk about relapsing remitting MS, if people have relapses over time, secondary progressive MS, if the major determinant for disability progression is in fact progression. So, and primary progressive MS, if people have a progressive deterioration of symptoms since onset. So it's all based on clinical aspects. But MRI gives us the possibility of looking at the biological mechanism. And what we can do in vivo to look at what's happening at microscopic level is really using MRI. And the idea is that we wanted to explore whether it's possible to define MS not on basis of clinical grounds, but on the basis of what the MRI shows. And we can't really identify patterns of MRI changes by just looking at the scans. We have to use advanced high-dimensional modeling to identify hidden patterns of MRI changes. So these techniques allow to identify groups of patients whose MRI scans behave similarly over time. So these are patterns that are not visible by looking at the scans, but when we use this unsupervised machine learning, we can identify subtypes of MS on the basis of how patients' MRI changes over time. And this is really interesting because we found that there is one specific subtype of MS, which is called the lesion type, where people are characterized by development of lesions that start early and then continue to accumulate over time. And this is the type of MS that seems to respond most to anti-inflammatory treatments. So the The potential of this technique is that in future it can be used to select people for clinical trials, so that those individuals who are more likely to respond to medications are selected. So we enrich, we use this technical term to say that we enrich trials with groups who are more likely to respond, so the trials can be faster, can be also require a less number of subjects, so it can also be cheaper and could speed up the identification of new effective therapies.
I think that's so interesting and really illustrates where the research community is moving in terms of not simply relying on the clinical presentation of symptoms, but being able to see, using tools like this, being able to see the biological mechanisms, which may be different, which may tell a different kind of a story, and then allow for more precise treatment for that particular patient.
Exactly. We have to define MS on the basis of the biological mechanisms. And obviously, it's very difficult to do that in vivo, but MRI offers a window into the biological mechanisms. And if we use MRI to redefine MS and identify subtypes of MS, then we are more likely to target the group of patients who is most likely to respond to that specific medication. If we have a medication that, for example, is targeting neuroprotection, and the MRI has given us the possibility of identifying patients whose neurodegeneration is the predominant mechanism, we are more likely to treat these people successfully if we put them into clinical trials rather than perhaps recruiting other patients who have their underlying mechanism really far from neurodegeneration. So it's the idea to try to bring together pathology and treatment, and the only way of doing this is actually using MRI or other biomarkers, such as, for example, serum biomarkers can be helpful, but my experience is more that MRI can really help to align and bring together pathology and treatment.
What would you want people affected by progressive MS to know about the future MS research?
I think the future looks bright because we have shifted our attention towards progressive MS, which is now treatment of progressive MS is unmet need. And I think although it looks like we're still progressing very slowly, in fact, if you look back what we have achieved in the last 10 years, we're actually going quite fast. And I think the possibility of stopping MS is real, and we have to continue working with the enthusiasm that this is going to be achievable soon.
Well, Professor Ciccarelli, thank you for all that you continue to do to improve the lives of people who are living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
We'll complete our review of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress in next week's episode of Real Talk MS, when you'll meet and hear from several more of the world-class researchers who contributed to this meeting. But that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/303. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. If you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.